Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I've got a really fun quick read today that is just a really interesting little article. It's another one on Medium. A thank you to Pierre Richard, because I probably would not have stumbled upon this one otherwise. He retweeted this out. And this is by Nick Bhatia, which you can find him on Medium and and Twitter at Time Value of BTC. That's his tag on Twitter and Medium. And this one is a short read called The Bitcoin Risk Spectrum. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into this one. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Bitcoin is already a reserve asset. It is the world's first true example of decentralized digital scarcity, and its elegant, predetermined supply schedule reinvents monetary policy. Its value is recognized by millions of people who own Bitcoin as a savings vehicle, speculative investment, or currency hedge. Bitcoin is a reserve asset because millions of people own it as one. Its next step is to transition from a reserve asset to a functioning reserve currency by unlocking the Bitcoin capital market. Lightning Network's arrival finally allows us to assign time value to Bitcoin, and we can begin building Bitcoin's capital market from first principles. Lightning Network. HTLCs are financial agreements with two important properties that eliminate reliance on trusted third parties. Firstly, the contracts have an embedded call option on the counterparty's Bitcoin, which dissuades theft. Secondly, the contracts have an expiration, which prevents balances to be held in limbo to perpetuity. These two properties remove counterparty risk, but instead introduce payment channel management risk. Routing Lightning payments is the equivalent of a short-term Bitcoin lease and allows the router to earn fees. These fees can be used to calculate interest earned on Bitcoin staked to Lightning payment channels. Traditional capital markets. Traditional capital markets have a risk spectrum. Generally speaking, higher variance of returns is positively correlated with a higher expected return. More risk, more reward. It is important to note that risk-free rates are entirely conceptual and theoretical. They are simply a matter of convention to facilitate financial theoretical research and improve communication. Therefore, this article is an attempt to discuss and derive Bitcoin-native financial theory, including how Bitcoin can be reconciled against other assets. Bitcoin is still trillions of dollars of market capitalization away from becoming a legitimate alternative to other deep capital markets like the ones denominated in US dollars, euros, yen, pounds, and yuan. Before we dissect Bitcoin's risk spectrum, let's take a look at that of the US dollar to get a sense of which aspects Bitcoin should copy and which it should reinvent. US dollar risk spectrum. Why is the US dollar the world's reserve currency? There are many reasons, including geopolitical and economic prowess, but one of the reasons is the depth of its capital market. There are over $100 trillion in bond and equity securities, allowing owners of U.S. dollars to easily find a home for them. Its capital market can be viewed as a risk spectrum, with risk on the x-axis and expected return on the y-axis. The first point illustrated on the risk spectrum is U.S. Treasury debt. Begin chart. Just a quick little summary of the chart that he's referring to here. It's literally just a straight line showing that the towards the bottom left of the chart, the reward is low specifically because the risk is low. And then as you increase towards the right side of the chart, we see both growing risk as well as a simultaneously growing reward in order to incentivize that risk. End chart. Financial theory requires a risk-free asset to establish baseline interest rates, and currently that asset is U.S. Treasuries. The obvious flaw of this financial theory is that U.S. Treasuries are not truly risk-free. They have default risk, albeit appropriately characterized by market as the lowest possible default risk that an investor can attain. Many sovereign bonds now have yields lower than yields in the United States, but those bonds are not denominated in U.S. dollars. This article is written only comparing Bitcoin to the U.S. dollar. The second point is corporate bonds. Companies issue fixed obligations at a spread to U.S. Treasuries. For example, this year Walmart issued a 5-year bond at 5-year Treasuries plus 0.6%. And General Motors issued a 5-year bond at 5-year treasuries plus 1.37%. Each of these companies use the 5-year U.S. Treasury as a reference rate. Investors consider the risk premium or creditworthiness of each company relative to the treasuries. We can see from this example that bond investors view Walmart as more creditworthy than General Motors because Walmart borrows at a lower spread to treasuries. This is why reference rates are considered an anchor for debt capital markets, because they more easily allow for relative value comparisons. Further along the risk spectrum are investments with higher risk profiles, such as publicly traded equities and venture capital funds. Theoretical formulas for the expected return on equities usually include a combination of the risk-free rate and the company's risk premium. Venture capital investors will seek an even higher return because the probability of principal loss is perceived to be higher than that of public equities. Theoretical risk premiums are added to each subsequent point of the risk spectrum, all anchored from the risk-free rate. Bitcoin risk spectrum. Bitcoin's capital market should be designed from first principles because its final settlement does not require trusted third parties. Final settlement of the US dollar has counterparty risk because deposits are considered a liability on banks' balance sheets. Holders of US dollars would rather face the US government as a counterparty rather than the banks, so they prefer to purchase US treasuries with their deposits. Either way, the final settlement has counterparty risk. Additionally, the U.S. dollar itself depends on a single nation and has a single entity controlling monetary policy in a discretionary way. Bitcoin avoids both of these risks. Let's take a look at Bitcoin's risk spectrum. Begin chart. Now, we actually have essentially the same expected return versus the risk chart with the increasing just linear growth out to the right. But the difference here is that there is a point rather than actually starting with a extremely low risk asset, there's actually a point somewhere in the middle where everything before it is actually no counterparty risk. Bitcoin itself does not have counterparty risk, and then LNRR, something that he will go into in just a minute, does not have any counterparty risk either. So there is a point where you can actually make an expected return before counterparty risk is actually introduced into the risk spectrum. End chart. The first point illustrated on Bitcoin's risk spectrum is Bitcoin held in cold storage. The analogy commonly used for cold storage is a gold bar held in your hand. There is no counterparty risk. The risk is its storage and security, much like if you had possession of physical gold. skilled storage and security practices make loss less likely, and the advent of robust multi-signature solutions further reduces risk. Private key management anchors the Bitcoin capital market, much like the timeliness and consistency of the U.S. government paying back its debt obligations anchor the U.S. dollar's capital market. The expected return on cold storage Bitcoin is at best zero and is actually negative if you consider that storage costs and on-chain transaction costs are non-zero. I am proposing that the second point on Bitcoin's risk spectrum should be LNRR, or the Lightning Network Reference Rate. Routing fees earned on Bitcoin staked to Lightning payment channels can be expressed as an interest rate. The rates received on the payment channel or node level can be hashed and cryptographically provable. Node operators can opt in to publish realized interest rates on their capital. If a consensus can be reached on an interest rate calculation protocol, capital providers can publish interest rates in an open and transparent way. Positive interest rates will attract bank-like entities that believe they can earn positive return using effective payment channel management and security techniques. Some Bitcoin previously held in cold storage will seek the income attainable in the Lightning Network. The first ever example of an opportunity cost trade-off in Bitcoin that does not require additional counterparty risk. Bitcoin staked to Lightning is the most unique income-producing asset in all of monetary history. Income with zero counterparty risk. The historical implications of this on capital markets are tremendous. A huge leap in risk exists between the second and third point on Bitcoin's risk spectrum. The first two points, if we have established, have various security and management risks, but no counterparty risk whatsoever. Real-world lending of Bitcoin has genuine counterparty risk, whether using exchange-based lending platforms or other forms of direct lending. In theory, these rates of borrowing should be higher than the Lightning Network Reference Rate, or LNRR, and capital providers could use the LNR rate to make relative value decisions between Bitcoin leasing via Lightning and off-chain Bitcoin lending. Any real-world lending will not have Bitcoin's blockchain as security. Lenders will need strong contracts in jurisdictions with strong rule of law to ensure repayment of capital, just as they do with fiat currencies. Complete loss of principal remains. Conclusion. I am increasingly optimistic that we are close to seeing the Lightning Network wallets provide a way to calculate interest earned via routing fees. Lightning development is accelerating, and the total Bitcoin staked to payment channels is increasing accordingly. The time value calculations that we are on the verge of realizing will underpin the entire Bitcoin capital market. It will not happen all of a sudden. Node operators will need to cryptographically prove interest earned over a long enough time horizon to attract larger sums of capital to the Lightning Network. Wallet infrastructure and security both still need a lot of improvement, especially as user experience leaves the command line and enters the graphical user interface phase. I am eager and excited to hear from the Lightning community on how we can achieve the first step on the path to reserve currency, interest rate, and time value calculations. All right, again, that was from Nick Bhatia, and it was titled The Bitcoin Risk Spectrum. If you enjoyed that one as much as I did, I absolutely thought that was a fascinating little read about how capital markets will evolve with Bitcoin as their foundation. Is that we really are starting from scratch. We're eliminating the very idea of U.S. Treasuries as the low-risk financial instrument at the base of this thing, and introducing a new alternative, essentially a payment layer staking that can earn a rate merely without counterparty risk. That's just, without counterparty risk is so, the quote that Pierre highlighted specifically was, Lightning Network's arrival finally allows us to assign time value to Bitcoin, and we can begin building Bitcoin's capital markets from first principles. And this is just a really, really, if anybody who's listened to this podcast knows that I'm a complete economics nerd. And one thing that, because time value and interest rates are so critical to the allocation of resources in, like, real resources in the broader economy, it's why I'm so vehemently against the centralized manipulation of those rates in order to encourage some behavior, when those rates are specifically things that are indicators of imbalances in the economy. So if we're manipulating these things to get some certain behavior, it's meaning that we're directly contradicting what the economy is saying is out of balance in order to worsen the imbalance. But all that aside, I thought this was just a really cool... Here's another quote, this one I highlighted. It says, these two properties, the fact that the contract has an embedded call option, that's, I've referred to it as the insurance on the counterparty's Bitcoin, in which is a, which dissuades theft. If you want to dig a little bit more deeply into that, episodes 47, 48, 49, and then 50, those first three are Aaron Von Wertheim's breakdown of the Lightning Network. And then 50 is my using those specific elements and descriptions of the protocol to answer a bunch of FUD about it. So I encourage you to dig a little bit deeper into that if you really want to learn about Lightning, because there's some really, really cool stuff in there. But secondly, the contracts have an expiration, which prevents balances being held in limbo to perpetuity. So these two properties remove counterparty risk, but instead introduce payment channel management risk. Routing Lightning payments is the equivalent of a short-term Bitcoin lease. It is leasing Bitcoin for use of to another party without having to worry about loss in their use of it. It's so crazy to think that, like, such a simple, just defining it that way makes you realize how impactful that could be on the financial markets, because that literally does not exist. Even a U.S. Treasury, the default risk, essentially the barometer with which everything else is measured by, still has counterparty risk, even at the lowest level. And Bitcoin is just fundamentally different from these, which is why the first principles, inevitably we will build a very different and more balanced economy on top of it, or at least that potential exists from a monetary instrument that is that predictable and does not have any trusted third parties involved. If I make a transaction with you or anyone else, we can essentially know that the rules apply equally to both of us, unquestionably. You don't have any special way to manipulate the protocol. I don't either. Therefore, it's the independent asset that allows us to trust each other, regardless of the other elements around our trade or what specifically we are trading. The Bitcoin is the independent asset that we don't have to worry about, that is scalable to, you know, whatever cultural or economic barriers that exist elsewhere. I really loved that one. When I read this, I was like, damn, this is just really good shit. One thing I want to say, before we close this one, the Nick Bhatia, I had actually not known about him. I've definitely followed him now, on both Twitter and Medium. And I encourage everyone to do the same. But one thing I want to take note of is that, for a long time at the beginning of this, I was asking permission to read these, and I've noticed, and then I read the Medium, like, terms and everything there, and it seems like it's not an issue to be reading everybody's content, and most people are very thankful. But one thing I don't want to do, the point of this was actually to get the content more exposure and get it to more people that would not be able to get it otherwise, or would not have the time to sit down and read it. But I also don't want to drive people away from the actual article by being able to hear it and then not ever go to it. It's kind of that dilemma between, am I reaching a broader audience or am I pulling away people who may have read it to listen to it instead on the podcast? If you enjoyed this one as much as I did, I love economics crap like this. Please go and applaud that article and follow Nick Bhatia on, that's Time Value of BTC. That's his Twitter tag, at Time Value of BTC, same on Medium. And check out his work and applaud that article, because I thought this was a really great concept introduced. And now I'm really excited to see somebody have the first provable Lightning Network rate of return, or reference rate, excuse me, to start to turn this thing into a capital market and a whole new risk spectrum where we can actually create systems without counterparty risk that allow the leasing of Bitcoin for other purposes or services without ever actually introducing a risk to loss of funds, just a higher management risk of the security and having your funds in a essentially more exposed wallet to like a hot wallet, which hopefully as we see more dedicated hardware, those wallets become a little bit cooler over time, if you will. But this really just shows some of the implications of the Lightning Network, and I'm not sure if anybody, I'm still looking for a good read on this, about the Wire protocol that was just released not too long ago, which is for watchtowers. It's specifically made for watchtowers, but it is pretty much just a communication protocol on top of Lightning in order to broadcast a service and a set fee and stipulations that go along with that, which can be used for practically anything. It can be used for, you know, online stores, hosting content, encrypted messaging servers, so on and so forth. Like, the possibilities of that are endless. It's just kind of starting from the base of, okay, well, we know we're going to want watchtowers as a service, so Lightning nodes may actually end up being a wide range of offering services onto the Lightning Network by managing it on these nodes and paying through Lightning channels the infrastructure to keep whatever the service in particular is up and running and expanded throughout a decentralized network. Okay, but we will stop there. Again, do not forget to check out Nick Bhatia at Time Value of BTC on Twitter and Medium, and of course follow me as well if you want to keep hearing about all this cool stuff at The Crypto Economy on Twitter and of course Medium as well. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and share it with all your friends so that they too can hear all the cool stuff happening in the crypto economy. And also, if you've been putting off buying a hardware wallet like I did for so long, don't do it anymore. Buy a Trezor if you have any amount of crypto that you need to secure. Any amount of money that would hurt very badly if you've lost it, I absolutely encourage you to buy a Trezor or the new Trezor Model T. I have not specifically used the Model T, but I love my Trezor. Been using it for a while now, and it is an excellent device. And you can get it through my affiliate link, which I will have posted on the podcast episode and, of course, with the post on Twitter. And it's a great way to donate a little bit of money to the show without actually costing anything. You get your hardware wallet just like you would have any other way, and I get a couple bucks for it. But otherwise, if you would like to donate to the show and you've already got your hardware wallet, you can feel free to donate to the address provided with the episode show notes, which I greatly, greatly appreciate, and it keeps this thing coming and lets me pay for a bunch of the services that host all this and work It keeps me working on it so that I don't have to do other things to stay alive. A couple of bucks and just paying for my morning coffee is a wonderful help, and I really, really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, everybody, and I will catch you tomorrow.